We'll be looking at Matthew chapter 25 this week, parable of 10 virgins. In Matthew, Jesus' earthly ministry is coming to a close here. And appropriately, perhaps, Matthew sees that it ends with stories about the end times, about what we would call eschatology, the study of the last things. Other Gospels give us the parable of the talents, which is the next one after this one. But no other Gospels relate this particular parable, nor the last one in which Jesus portrays the final judgment. It's possible that as Matthew looks out at his audience, he feels the strong need to remind people of these particular stories, because perhaps by the time he writes this, maybe the church has gotten to the point where they wonder, you know, why is the delay? Why has Jesus not come back yet? We do notice in the book of 1 Thessalonians, chapters 4 and 5, Paul has to address the same things. He talks to them about those who have already fallen asleep, and he says, look, Christ is going to come back. Don't worry about those people. But you all know that when he comes, he's going to come like a thief in the night. So everybody needs to be ready. So there has to be this reminder. And I'm guessing Matthew put his material together and he remembered these things that Jesus said. And maybe he's telling it to his audience. And certainly for us to remember, be ready at any time. As we look at the story, it is that very delay that drives the conflict and determines the outcome of the story, isn't it? What we see here is people have to wait. And the effect that it takes on both the wise and the foolish is the lesson for us to derive from this story. And so we begin simply thinking about the story itself today, and then we're going to look at the foolish virgins as well as the wise ones and see what drives them here. In the parable of these 10 virgins, we have a wedding feast portrayed. And those of you perhaps who may have engaged and enjoyed some jokes about the bride being late to different weddings, you'll want to notice here that it's the bridegroom who's late. All right? For whatever that's worth, I know we always tend to joke about things like weddings and who's on time and who's not. It's the bridegroom who's late here. All right? And it causes a certain amount of consternation among the bridal party. Well, maybe it's not consternation. They just get sleepy in waiting. It's late. It's midnight by the time he shows up. But we do notice here that delay is not only the problem here, but it's the problem in several other passages right around this whole section. In chapter 24 and verse 48, he's trying to say to them as well, no one knows the day and the hour. And he says, but if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and begins to beat his fellow servants, etc., etc., delay's the problem there. He's got to wait. He's got to keep being faithful during the time that he still has to wait. And over in chapter 25 and verse 19, we see the same thing in the parable of the talents. The master goes away, and he's gone for a while. And everybody has to remain faithful while he's gone and do what they have to do. It becomes a matter of how to deal with the unexpected and with the passing of time. And maybe we even want to say here with the droning on of time. Because time just doesn't always pass quickly until you get old and look back and say, where'd all the time go? But sometimes time just seems to drone on, doesn't it? Especially if you're going through a struggle. The effect on those who must wait with patience is what we have to see, is how the lesson works itself out here. Delay may be the cause, but exclusion or inclusion is the effect. That's what happens. The foolish virgins cannot enter into the wedding feast. It seems kind of cruel for such a small thing, but the lesson, as we continue to see it, really is very profound. They all fall asleep. They all get tired. But turmoil only results for those who have not been diligent ahead of time. Watchfulness, therefore, involves active preparation, not just the passing of time. And that's where I think we make our mistake. active preparation versus just passive waiting. And so we begin by looking at the foolish virgins. What was going on with them? Why did the delay affect them the way it did? You know, it's interesting to think about this because delay may be the thing that causes the conflict, but it's only the trigger. It's not the real cause of the problems that they encounter. The real problem and the cause of what they encounter is something within each of them. The delay only reveals the differences between the two groups. The flaws in their behavior surfaces when difficulties arise. Neither the foolish virgins nor we can blame any bad circumstances for our troubles. That maybe is one of the temptations of the foolish virgins. And we have to look closely at our responses to those circumstances. You see, they could easily say, well, you know, the delay is what caused it. And maybe they could have even, when they stood there and knocked and tried to get in, well, you were late. How come, you know, it was your fault that you were late? He doesn't, you know, the bridegroom doesn't say that to them. He doesn't say, okay, I guess it was all my fault that I was late and, you know, well, you weren't ready. You should have been prepared. Blaming everything but ourselves, you see, creates a pattern of irresponsibility because we like to shift the blame. We don't want to feel that we are the ones responsible for ourselves. Think about any of the building projects that maybe you've been involved in or the you know, projects at home you've been involved in. Has anybody ever had something they had to do and not run into a difficulty at some point, and maybe it got delayed or you had to do a little something extra? I know every time I get into some project, I go, man, I wasn't expecting to have to do that, you know, or I wasn't expecting to have to spend money on this other thing. Something always seems to come up, and how we handle that perhaps is the message here. Are we prepared, at least mentally, to deal with those kinds of things? What are the underlying causes for these foolish virgins? Why weren't they ready with extra oil? Well, we're not really told, but I think we can speculate just a little bit. I think before they got to the wedding, there were maybe other concerns that they had. They got really busy, didn't have time to go buy extra oil. They were distracted with something. Even before the time of cell phones, texting, and Twitter, they were distracted. That's my guess. My suspicion is that human nature hasn't really changed all that much since the first century. And even with the advent of all the technology we have, it's just another thing. It's a pretty big one because we do get distracted with all the technology. But the fact is, it's just one other thing that can distract us. Maybe they said to themselves beforehand, well, we just really didn't have time to go buy the extra oil. Why didn't you have time? Did you not think about it? You know, the parable of the sower reveals people who are distracted by the cares of the world. I think that's a really interesting phrase, the cares of the world. Interestingly vague, but it leaves open a number of possibilities. Sometimes we have what we might consider to be, and I think can legitimately consider to be, legitimate burdens of life. Grief can weigh us down. Concerns about our health can weigh us down. Concerns about family can weigh us down. Concerns about our lives in general. Concerns about money. They can all weigh us down. Okay? Those are not necessarily illegitimate things. Unfortunately, the result is still the same. If we allow those things to burden us, if we allow those things to kind of take over our lives, we end up with the kind of the same result. We can't think beyond the moment and momentary feelings. Like Esau. Remember what Esau did? He came in from the field and he was really, really hungry. And when he was really hungry, he saw that his brother had some soup. And his brother says to him, okay, I'll tell you what, I'll give you some soup if you sell me your birthright. Did he really stop to think about how expensive that bowl of soup was? So overcome with was he by his hunger that he said, okay, yeah, go ahead. I need to eat, and I need to eat now. Okay? was a lot of money. It was a double portion of what his father owned, which was a considerable amount of items. And he sold it for a bowl of soup? That's not thinking very far ahead. That's thinking about only the moment. And people give in to their impulses in the moment, don't we? I think in terms of our spiritual life, we can attribute this inattention to something that the ancients used to call sloth or laziness or acedia. Okay? And that doesn't just mean, well, you don't want to get up and do something. You know, you're too lazy to go out and rake the leaves, which is, that's always for me. I never want to do that. But it really has a deeper meaning. Sloth was described as hatred of all spiritual things which entail effort. Think about that. Hatred of all spiritual things which entail effort. And faint-heartedness in matters of difficulty. Some would say sloth will endure no hardship nor any penance. And one writer described it this way, and I quote, "The sin of sloth consists in our submission to the natural human tendency to avoid our obligations when they demand effort and sacrifice." Let me read that again. I like that. "The sin of sloth consists in our submission to the natural human tendency to avoid our obligations when they demand effort and sacrifice." You see, essentially, the foolish virgins committed this sin long before they experienced the delay of the bridegroom. That's what got them into trouble. They had not taken the extra effort required to really be ready. And Jesus isn't just talking about wedding feasts and lamps and oil, is he? He's talking about our spiritual lives. He's talking about what we do to prepare ourselves and be ready and be watchful for the second coming of Jesus Christ. Well, how about the wise virgins? What do we know about them? Again, not really all that much, other than we know the result. They were ready. Wisdom was revealed in them by watchfulness and by preparation. They had taken the effort well ahead of time to be ready. In Luke chapter 12, verses 35 through 40, Jesus describes servants who are waiting for their master to return home, dressed and ready for them. And as soon as he came, the servant was there opening the door for him and have him come home, be ready for him when he came home. And you know what Jesus says in that story? He says, you know what the master will do? The master, when he comes, will dress himself and will serve the servant. Rather interesting turnaround of the way things normally are supposed to work. Does not the Apostle Paul tell his audience in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 6 to keep awake because you don't know the hour that he's coming? Peter says in 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 14, "Since you are waiting for these things, be diligent to be found in him." Readiness, diligence, preparation. In Luke chapter 8 and verse 15, when Jesus is describing the good soil where the seed falls on it and produces a crop, it says, "Good soil bears fruit with patience." And we hear in that story, we hear in that statement there, the whole notion of the passing of time. Okay? And again, it's not just a passive waiting. Patience is not just passive waiting. That's what we think of. Patience maybe is a kind of activity of preparing and being ready and not allowing the time passing to just, you know, sort of make us fall asleep without being ready. It demands patience, or it demands forethought and effort. I think it also demands something that is a hard thing for kids to learn. Hopefully you learned it as a kid. And that is the experience of delayed gratification. Okay? When your kids were young and you walked through the grocery store, you know, they all wanted, especially at the checkout counter anymore. I mean, it's all sitting right out there for people to see. They want this. They want that. Nope, 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 nope. You know, and they're great lobbyists. You know, I figure kids, you know, as they're growing up, they're lobbyists even before they grow up. You know, they know how to get things. Well, you know, what you try to teach them is delayed gratification. No, you can't have that right now. Maybe you can have it later, or maybe you can have such and such if you earn it and spend some time earning some money, and you can buy that, you know, I don't know, Xbox, whatever it is, you know, you want to buy. You have to earn the money for that. That's delayed gratification. Emphasis being on delayed. Are you ready to delay things? Can you stay faithful and watchful when things are delayed? The outcome of the wise virgins, guess what? They got through the door when the others did not. The foolish virgins were locked out of the kingdom of God. And that's really what this is all about, isn't it? The wedding feast is the kingdom of God. I've often wondered, why don't the wise virgins help the foolish virgins by giving them oil? That's never discussed. It's never thought of by Jesus as a legitimate option here. And even the wise virgins say, look, if we give you some, we're not going to have enough either. What they don't say is implied here, we were smart enough to go get some. I'm sorry, but I cannot give you any of mine. And they said, all right, you want some, you're going to have to go buy some now. It's maybe a little late, but you know, go try and get some quickly. They don't have time because, well, you know, think of it this way too. The bridegroom maybe wouldn't have had any bridesmaids if the five had given him their oil. Nobody would have had enough. But the lesson here is the importance of individual responsibility for the care of one's own spiritual well-being. Do we take that, you know, responsibility seriously? And be very careful. I mentioned earlier that sometimes, you know, legitimate burdens overcome us and overwhelm us. And maybe the solution here is to think about our spiritual life as a solution to some of those burdens, or at least as some way that can help us get through them. But we allow our burdens to overwhelm us, and we allow them to focus our attention, and we forget about our spiritual life. We forget about spiritual matters. At the judgment, we won't be able either to blame or depend on someone else. It's going to be up to us. The bridegroom says to them, go away, I don't know you. Man, that sounds pretty cruel. It's probably a Jewish idiom for, I just don't want anything more to do with you. But, you know, there's a very strong element here of responsibility on the part of each individual for his own spiritual well-being. Be watchful. Don't allow things to overcome you. Be careful of busyness, distractions, burdens, whatever they can be. Your spiritual life is really the most important thing that you have to tend to in some way. The judgment is severe for those who don't endure the necessary effort and perform the necessary diligence to be a faithful Christian. The way is hard and the gate is narrow that leads to eternal life. Look for it. Make the effort. We're not asking, I don't think God is asking for monumental efforts. He's asking simply for diligence, to pay attention to your spiritual life, to make sure that's the one thing that doesn't get shoved aside, to make sure that's the one thing that's not a distraction. Not only is it not a distraction, it's the goal. It's the essence of what you need to be doing. So my encouragement today is simply to let us be diligent in our efforts now before the sudden coming catches us unaware and unprepared. Eric? Oh, I'm sorry, it's Floyd. I'm looking over at Eric the whole time, Eric. Floyd, let's stand and sing, please. I'm sorry.